This is the Unconquered Podcast, unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
We're back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting more banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples, football analyst at NoleDigest.com. First order of business is to apologize for the lack of podcasts the last couple weeks. My house actually was struck by lightning 3 weeks ago and caught on fire, so I've been dealing with the fallout of having to deal with a major house fire and all the things that entails, from replacing equipment to moving to another. I'm in temporary housing for the next 4 or 5 months until they can rebuild. And they've got to basically gut and rebuild the house, and then obviously replace a good bit of stuff. So obviously I've been pretty busy since then. I've really wanted to get to get back to doing some of this, doing some podcasting and talking about all the really exciting developments that we've seen so far in the season. There's a lot for Florida State fans to be excited about. Obviously Jameis Winston has looked terrific. There's been a whole lot that's happened in these last 3 weeks, and we haven't really been able to talk about it since. So we are back. We will be doing these podcasts on the regular again. On this podcast, we're going to do the best we can to catch up, looking a little bit more on the offensive side. We're going to try to get one more done, looking a little bit more at the defensive side before we get to the Boston College game. But we're going to go through a little bit of each game in this first podcast back, and we'll evaluate whether or not there've been some changes on the offense so far. We'll be looking at what we can kind of look for going forward. And evaluate really how things have looked. Obviously the schedule so far, there's some questions about that. So we're going to look at all those things over the course of this podcast, and then we'll look a little bit more closely at the defense in the next one. Okay, so let's move on to the first segment. So going back to the Pittsburgh game, I felt going in, and I still feel that the Pittsburgh defense, was better than a lot of people thought, and that the Pittsburgh team was actually better than most people thought. Obviously when Florida State just went in and destroyed them in that first game, a lot of people have had their doubts. A lot of people have questioned whether or not, Pittsburgh was just that bad, or whether Florida State is really that good. And so far, I think actually looking at the results since then, Pittsburgh is every bit as good as we thought they would be. Maybe not quite as good on defense as we thought coming in, but still a viable defense, one of the better defenses Florida State's going to play all year. Certainly one of the best front sevens in the ACC still. Having some trouble back in the secondary, and I think they do miss their defensive coordinator from last year, who's now at NC State. Looking at how NC State played on defense against Clemson this last week, you could see, some of the benefit that he's offered NC State that quickly. So I think Pittsburgh's still a top 35 or so team. It's a good football team. They're one of the better teams on the coastal side. I think they have a chance of finishing, say, third or fourth on that side. I'm still not sold on everybody in the Coastal Division. I think Georgia Tech is the clear favorite at this point. I felt like whoever won the Georgia Tech North Carolina game would come out as a clear favorite in that side. And I think this is the best Georgia Tech team that we've seen in quite a few years. So I think Georgia Tech is the favorite on that side. But that's going to be a competitive division, and Pittsburgh's going to be able to compete with every team on that side. So there's really no reason, I think, on the basis of that first game and looking at how dominant Florida State was, to really feel like, Pittsburgh just didn't offer much resistance. I think, in fact, if you look at it, one thing a lot of people have not really brought up is, the defense in certain spots did look vulnerable against Pittsburgh, but, Pitt only scored 13 points in that game, and they've scored 49 and 58 in the two games following. Both against FBS schools, not necessarily the best defenses in the country, but still, when they're averaging over 50 points a game outside of the 13 that you gave up, You know, you've got to feel fairly good about that. Now, in terms of the offense on that side with the Pittsburgh game, you know, obviously it was really, you know, it was a coming out party for Jameis Winston, who, you know, everybody, and you know, the buzz of the last 3 weeks has been talking about how he's actually managed to somehow exceed the expectations for him coming into the season, which were already sky high. I mean, somehow he's managed to exceed even those expectations. So, you know, it's a very good sign for Florida State fans going forward. The thing that, to me, he's flashed the most, the thing that's the most significant is, and we'll talk about this just a little bit later in the second segment, but is exactly how good his anticipation is. I mean, he has elite level anticipation. He's able to see things quickly. The game moves the game naturally moves slowly for this kid. And, you know, there are not many guys for whom the game moves that slowly. I mean, there aren't many guys in the NFL who see things as quickly as what Winston does. I think that's something that it's innate. You have to have that kind of intuition that he has to be able to see things and recognize where they're going to throw to the right spot and throw guys open. And he's really able to do that. And you know, Pittsburgh did what, you know, a lot of teams would do facing a first year quarterback. You know, they initially wanted to make sure, they wanted to make him throw. They wanted to challenge him. And you know, even though there were guys there were guys covering at points, he threw his guys open. And you know, it's amazing how wide open receivers have looked since Winston took over. And really, you know, if you look at that, that's carried out through the first three games. You know, that's been a constant. It's been just wide open wide receivers. And, you know, these are the same guys that we saw last year. So, you know, that really is on the quarterback to a large extent. And showing exactly how well he's able to see things and put things out on time. I mean, he's anticipating, you know, where guys are going to be both on offense and defense, and he's able to throw to those spots and get guys open by throwing to the right spots, and that's just huge. You know, as far as Nevada and Bethune-Cookman, you know, those they're not teams that you really could gain much from. I did feel like Winston against Bethune-Cookman flashed a little bit of the, you know, he gambles a little bit too much. Sometimes he takes too many chances, and you know, that was the knock on him coming through fall practice. You know, there were a number of times in fall ball where he was, or you know, summer camp or whatever you want to call it, or a number of times during summer camp when he was making sort of ill-advised throws. He's able to see things quickly, but you know, he's making a throw, you know, believing that he can stick it in there. And when you're going against really, really small windows like what you've got against a secondary as good as what Florida State has, you know, that led to some batted balls, that led to some ill-advised interceptions when, you know, he's just trying to go out there and make a play. He gets greedy sometimes, and I think you saw that a few times against Bethune-Cookman where, you know, he felt like a given play call or whatnot should be a score. It should go to this spot, and you know, he settled in a little bit early on where that should go. And you know, they maybe brought pressure. They did a couple things to throw that off just a little bit. And you know, he tried to stick with it and stick a ball in there, you know, maybe that he shouldn't have. And that's something that's going to need to get fixed over the course of the year. But you know, quite frankly, you'd rather have a quarterback who has that kind of confidence and has the arm to stick balls in spots, then, you know, have the opposite problem of a kid who really knows his limitation but's really limited. So, I mean, you know, as Fisher likes to say, you know, I'd rather have to say whoa than giddy up. And Winston's one of those guys. I mean, he can say whoa all he wants, and Winston sometimes is still gonna be at full gallop. It's just the way he plays the game. The only concern is, you know, going into some of the better competition later in the year, in particular against Florida, who, you know, may have the best secondary in the country. If it's not Florida State, Florida sure, certainly has, at least to this point, had the best defense in the country. We'll see. There's some indication that Easley may have a knee injury, which would change things significantly there, as he's their best guy. But you know, they've had the best defense in the country, and when you're playing a defense like that, you know, the windows are a lot smaller, and you've got to be you know, right on. You've got to make sure that you're making the right decision and you're making the safe decision, because if you don't, then you know, those defenses will make you pay. So, you know, looking at that going forward, you know, that's a minor concern. You know, he flashed some of that, you know, freshman greed that you see. You know, in particular, actually, the play that that you know everybody's been talking about since Bethune-Cookman has been, you know, this a play where, you know, he danced around in the backfield, broke a tackle, and then sort of made a falling down throw for a touchdown to Kelvin Benjamin. You know, that play might have been a much easier touchdown, or at least would have gotten inside the five had he just made the quick read and gone to Abram in the flat immediately. You know, as soon as he recognized the saw blitz, it was Sam and Will, as soon as he recognized that you've got, you know, those both of those linebackers coming, you go immediately to your check down there, and he's, you know, Abram runs fairly well. You know, he may have just scored there, and it may have been a lot easier. And that's something that Winston's just going to get better at over the course of the year. And I think he, you know, over the first two games, he actually did a remarkably good job of not getting greedy. And that's one of the reasons the offense has just looked so smooth and so easy, is because he's just been taking, you know, making the reads, generally speaking, where he needs to go, and putting the ball right in the right spots, you know, anticipating. So, you know, that is, you know, it's exactly what you would have hoped for so far from a freshman. He's showing everything that everybody would have hoped, could have hoped for on the Florida State side. And, you know, there's a lot to be excited about there. Now, moving into segment two, look, you know, the next thing that a lot of people have been asking about, or have been, you know, sort of wondering, is exactly how much the offense has changed from last year, because it certainly looks different, right? I mean, the offense has just been so explosive and so efficient over the course of the last couple of games, in particular in the passing game, that, you know, the offenses of the last couple of years were, you know, even when they were scoring a lot of points, you know, things just, nothing ever really came easy over the last couple of years. It rarely looked just very easy for the offense, you know, to just go out there and do whatever they wanted. Whereas, you know, this year, if, you know, it's a remarkable thing. And, you know, actually I can remember back in Christian Ponder's junior year, back in 2009, I remember having similar feelings about this, where, you know, if you get, you know, a holding penalty on first down or a false start or something like that, the last couple years, you know, whenever you've gotten that sort of thing and you're suddenly playing behind the sticks, it was like, oh man, you know, now it's going to be pulling teeth, and you're just hoping that, you know, that there's no turnover, that nobody else does anything stupid, and you're hoping to get good field position on the punt. You know, you're just expecting to kind of grind that out and, you know, maybe survive. You're hoping to survive and not get a turnover. With Ponder and Winston, you never have that feeling. You know, third and long, third and seven or eight, you actually believe that you're going to get it. You know, well, just dial up the third and 10 play then. You know, and that's the thing that having an elite quarterback who's playing at a high level gives you, is this sense that, you know, there's nothing to worry about. Everything is going to move easily, because even if you get behind the sticks, you know, you're looking at a guy that should be able to stick a ball in there and just keep moving. And that just changes the game effectively. But, you know, in terms of what the offense has done differently, they've really done very little differently. In fact, if you go back to the Pitt game, we were probably the only publication at Noel Digest. We're probably the only publication out there that told people not to expect Florida State to go into that game trying to run the football and establish the run, but instead going out and establishing Winston as a passer first. And this is the way that Jimbo Fisher works. And a lot of people out there just apparently don't understand Fisher's psychology on this, even though he's talked about it a good bit in past years. Basically, Fisher, he's a former quarterback. He understands when it's easy to throw, you know, when it's easiest for a quarterback to throw the football. And if you're a young quarterback, the first thing that he's going to do, and he did this a lot with EJ, even as a fifth-year senior, to try to protect his quarterback, what he'll do is he throws a lot on first down. He'll try to play action. He'll try to use neutral downs and running downs to throw the football. And you know, because that's when you have the least pass rush. That's when you have the most favorable coverages. And then use passing downs to run the football. You know, it's a conservative approach, actually, to do that. But, you know, when you've got a young quarterback, if the kid can throw at all, then, you know, you come out throwing on those first few first downs and loosen the defense up immediately, because it's the easiest time that he's ever going to have to throw it, because you know that defense is going to try to lock in on the running game. And as it turned out, Winston, you know, hit his first 11 passes of the game by, you know, technically, even though the 12th was actually complete as well. They just didn't review it. and you know, completed 24-26 in that first game. So, you know, when you do that, you know, you can keep throwing it as much as you want on any down. But you know, not much has really changed. I mean, he's still taking that approach of, you know, being aggressive on first down, throwing the football, and you know, using neutral downs as a good opportunity to keep it safe and keep it easy for his quarterback, while making sure that he's not putting his quarterback in a bind in long yardage situations. So, you know, in terms of concepts as well, you know, in terms of what they're running, there really haven't been a lot of changes there either. We actually expected there to be a little bit more. I mean, I certainly expected there to be a little bit more of a vertical running game this year, a little bit more power stuff. And they've flashed a little bit of it, but quite frankly, there's still, as I did explain in an earlier podcast that, you know, Rick Trickett's offensive line training and, you know, the way that Fisher is going to run the offense, it's always going to be an outside zone heavy scheme. I mean, that's the bread and butter. That's what Trickett teaches his linemen first. So they're going to continue to do outside zone stuff, but that's been a little bit more featured even than we expected, than I expected. And you know, that's just, you know, they're continuing to do that as a base. And then, you know, they've done a few other things. So there have been some other wrinkles as the offensive line is more experienced and it's played actually quite well so far. Basically what they've done, they've added a little bit of a sort of a tackle trap sort of play, it's basically a little counter, with a tackle peeling behind and leading the tailback, to the opposite side. So, you know, and Bobby Hart's flashed a lot of good mobility on that play. And it's been quite effective at different points. They use that a good bit actually this last week against Bethune-Cookman. But by and large, the running game has basically been the same type of stuff that they were running last year. And on the passing game, I mean, they've run basically five or six concepts all year. They've flashed nothing. I mean, so far they've only used what they've needed to. They've run a ton of Houston. You know, it's a little concept with an option route to the tight end and then a post route and a flat route on one side. There's a couple different concepts that they'll run on the other side, but they're running a ton of Houston. They've run that a bunch in each game, and they're running a lot of smash, which, you know, Fisher loves both of those concepts. He's had a lot of success teaching those concepts in the past, and you know, they've run the heck out of them. I mean, they ran them like 16 or 17 times out of those, you know, first 26 passes that Winston had in the first game. You know, and they ran a bunch of them last year. They ran Houston, I think, nine times in the second half against Clemson last year. So, you know, they're running the same basic stuff. You know, Houston smash, a few other quick game concepts. You know, your some slants, things like that, and then some basic boot concepts. I mean, the main one you've seen so far is basically where there's a receiver on a vertical route on the side of the boot, and then, you know, crossing pattern where you'll have the slot receiver come across the pattern, and so far you've seen Kenny Shaw just wide open on this concept a couple times. But I mean, they ran the same kinds of stuff last year. The one thing that we did talk about in the preseason that you have seen a couple times, but it hasn't been a whole lot, has been some four verticals concepts where you have, you know, four people out in the pattern release vertically, you know, and basically you give Winston the opportunity to basically just make the proper read and see where he's going to go. And you know, you'll see some back shoulder fades, things like that on that. But you haven't really seen a whole lot of that at this point because they've just been running the basic stuff and just running the heck out of it. You have seen also a couple little double moves off of things like Houston where, you know, instead of running a standard option route when the safeties start to jump out of the out at the outside receivers, that sort of thing. Instead of running a standard option route, you'll see, you know, the first touchdown against Pittsburgh was basically a riff off of that, where basically Nick O'Leary took a step inside and then released over the top, and you know, it turns out to be a pretty easy touchdown. But again, the reason that you know, they ran a lot of this stuff, they ran all this stuff basically with EJ, and you know, basically the difference is that Winston just has such terrific anticipation that it looks like a completely different offense. I mean, that's the reason. I mean, the offense is different because Winston is getting the ball out quickly and is putting the ball out on time. And we'll have a couple pieces here on Null Digest here soon where we're going to analyze exactly what's going on in terms of in terms of that difference in anticipation and how different that makes it look, because you've got receivers that are actually still separating as the ball comes to them and that sort of thing. So, you know, that, and that, you know, brings in, you know, brings in the subject of our next segment, which is how complicated is Jimbo Fisher's offense? You know, people have, there's been some criticism the last couple of years from people who really don't know what they're talking about, you know, basically that, that Jimbo Fisher's in love with this playbook, or, you know, the, this typical, criticism that Jimbo Fisher is in love with his playbook, that he runs such a complicated offense that, you know, he could just, he just needs to simplify things and run basic stuff so that, you know, a guy like EJ can be more successful. And really, you know, the fact is, you know, Fisher's offense is not very complicated. It's not all that complicated. It's an offense that requires intuition, anticipation, and trust. You know, if you saw the actually the South Carolina North Carolina game at the beginning of the year, Jesse Palmer actually talked about why Steve Spurrier's offense at times can be difficult for a young quarterback because it takes so much trust to run things the way that Spurrier wants them run, because Spurrier, instead of telling you to just go through a standard 1-2-3-4 and look at each receiver and determine whether he's open, look at the, you know, go through that kind of go through that kind of progression, Spurrier wants you to look at an area and make the throw, and you throw into the area before anybody ever gets there. And you know, Palmer talked about how hard it is for a young quarterback to learn how to trust that your guy is going to be there, trust that what you're seeing is actually what's happening, and to put the ball into the right spot. And but then, as he put it, as he explained, you know, when you're able to do that sort of thing, you know, when, once you learn to trust it, and once you learn to, you know, look at the spot and throw there, then as Palmer said, you know, you can put up just absurd, silly numbers in that kind of system. And Fisher's system is very similar to that. You know, Spurrier runs that kind of system. Fisher runs a system that's similar in terms of he doesn't run a totally progression-based system. You know, the quarterback does not drop back with, you know, three distinct options to go, okay, well, you know, here's the play, and we're going to go 1-2-3-4 sort of progression. What Spurrier or what Fisher wants people to, what wants his quarterback to do, is to recognize the coverage and make a quick decision on the basis of what he sees on the coverage. And you've got to be able to trust what you see as a quarterback, and you've also got to be able to identify the coverage. You've got to be able to read safeties, and that's not that difficult really, but it does take some intuition, and it takes some confidence to really know that you're hitting it in the right spot. And you know, you've got to read that backside safety and know, okay, he's dropping off, so I've got a two safety look, so that means that I should be going here, and then you just make the throw. And so, you know, Fisher, I mean, it's not that there's no progression, but it's a hybrid coverage based system rather than just a progression base. And so, you know, you're going to get some progression, you know, based on what you see, but it's not really all sequential. You know, you're just basically reading the coverage, and you go to where the coverage isn't. And, you know, if you can recognize what's happening quickly, you know, like Jesse Palmer said, you can put up just silly numbers. Bobby Petrino runs another, he's another guy that does this sort of thing. If you don't do that sort of thing, if you have trouble reading that safety, if you're having trouble making the, you know, confidently establishing where you should go, if you're not getting the ball out on time, then that's going to bog things down. And that's really what happened with EJ last year. EJ, you know, it was able to take the, you know, to draw things up on the board. You know, EJ's a smart guy, and he's able to, you know, he was able to go to the whiteboard and this is what you do against this coverage. If he's here, then you go here, this sort of thing. He could answer all the questions. But when it came time for game time, then the problem is that EJ at times would freeze. He would bog down. He wouldn't make the read. He didn't read the safeties quickly enough, or he got rid of the ball way too late, or, you know, a number of times you'd see him double clutch and wasn't sure if, you know, he should go here or here, because he didn't trust his reads, and sometimes he didn't make the read. And that's why actually you saw EJ when he got to the NFL, you know, the comment that he made about the Buffalo Bills offense actually being easier to learn, being simpler than what he had at Florida State. It's not that Fisher's offense is complicated at all. I mean, as we just talked about, I mean, last year the same thing was true as what we've seen in these first couple games, that, you know, they were only ran, you know, five or six concepts pretty much all year last year in the passing game. I mean, that's simple. It's as simple as you can get, and they're simple pass concepts. But they require you as a quarterback, in the way that Fisher teaches it to his quarterbacks, they require you to make those reads and make them quickly. Whereas in Buffalo, they're going on a standard progression read system with Manuel, at least at the start. And, you know, they're working from a progression system initially and letting him just drop back and look at one guy, look at the next guy, and look at the next guy, and then go, that sort of thing. And that's, you know, that is, it's easier to learn. It's easier when you're young. When you're a young quarterback with no experience, to just jump right into that. But if you're a guy who has great anticipation, if you're a guy who has, you know, solid intuition and can kind of just see where guys are on the field, you're going to be more successful in a hybrid coverage based system like what you've got with Fisher, and the same, you know. By the way, that's the same thing, you know, Clint Trickett, when he got to West Virginia this year, he made similar comments about, you know, the progression system that Dana Holgorsen is teaching up there and how that's, you know, you learn it easier than what you've got at Florida State. But again, you can see right now that without a quarterback up there who can, and without difference makers at receiver, you know, their offense doesn't look all that great up at West Virginia this year. And, you know, there were a lot of people last year who were complaining about Florida State's offense and wanted Dana Holgorsen at Florida State. Well, I don't think that any of those folks are feeling the same way right now. You know, when you have a quarterback who can anticipate like this, you know, and that's the single biggest and most important thing for a Jimbo Fisher offense is having a quarterback who can anticipate, who can make those reads and get the ball out on time. If you've got that guy in that offense, and you know, you can make just absurd numbers are there. And you know, Winston not only has good anticipation, not only has good intuition, but he has elite level intuition. He has, you know, he anticipates and gets rid of the football and sees this spot. And you know, it's sort of like an elite point guard. When you have an elite point guard, you know, they talk about how he sees things before they happen. And, you know, he's able to throw the ball. He's able to put, you know, pass the ball to spots before guys are even there. That's what you've got with Jameis Winston. You've got a guy who is an elite point guard who is seeing those things before they happen. And when you've got that kind of guy in this kind of offense, there's going to be lots of space. And, you know, that's just going to create that space because the offense is designed for that. And now all of a sudden you're throwing into those spaces before guys are there and you're hitting guys on the run. You know, there weren't many times in the last 2 years where you saw receivers actually get hit in stride and not have to slow down, break down, or, you know, stop running. And at this point, you know, you're seeing that on nearly every play with Winston where these guys are catching the ball on the move. And that just, again, that just increases the amount of space that you're seeing on offense. All right, and moving into the final segment here, I want to talk a little bit also about Carlos Williams' move to running back. As far as I'm concerned, and we talked about this before, on the Noll Digest premium boards before his first game at this, but as far as I'm concerned, Florida State, by moving Carlos Williams to running back, just landed the number one running back recruit in the country for the rest of the year. You know, Leonard Fournette is, you know, the top running back recruit in the country for next year. And, you know, he's one of the best running back recruits I've seen on tape in some years, maybe since Adrian Peterson. But as far as I'm concerned, getting Carlos Williams to running back this year is basically the equivalent of having a little bit more experienced Fournette or somebody like that immediately on the roster. Williams is already the most instinctive and best running back on the team. You do have Devontae Freeman as a very instinctive runner as well, but Williams, you know, obviously has some physical tools that Freeman doesn't. And when you take the whole package, Williams is certainly the best running back, the best total runner on the team. Of course, he's going to have to learn He's, you know, there's been good reports out of practice so far, and from what I've what I saw against Bethune-Cookman, you saw a lot of improvement on things like pass protection. That was something where against Bethune-Cookman, I think the main emphasis was to get him on the field and try to have him actually in pass protection and to call different stuff so that he would have to make the reads and pick up guys and know what route to run on certain things. And that's the hard part for a running back. And, you know, he did terrifically well against Bethune-Cookman and, you know, continues to get good reviews coming out of practice that he's going to do those things right. And if he does those things right, then you're looking at the best running back on the roster already. And, you know, it's not just the home run speed. I mean, the first carry that he had against Nevada, you know, he went 65 yards for a touchdown. And, you know, obviously the speed jumps out at you right away. But quite honestly, you know, the scout's rule of thumb is that you always watch the 5-yard runs. You know, everybody's going to have big play, you know, big play tapes. Everybody's going to have all sorts of highlights and so on where, you know, they're running for a touchdown and, you know, they're not touched. But what you want to do is you want to watch the 5-3-yard run. You know, you want to watch the 3-yard run, the 5-yard run. You want to watch the runs that aren't blocked perfectly, or where a guy actually has to show vision, has to make a cut, do these sorts of things. That's what scouts are looking for when they look at running backs, because everybody's going to be able to, you know, have some big plays or whatever. Now, obviously, he's got better speed than just about any back in the country. You know, he's a 10.5 guy in the 100 meters. But you know, the main thing is, what he showed in terms of the other runs against Nevada and also against Bethune-Cookman is he showed very good hips, better hips than most people expected, and the ability to bounce the ball outside. And then, you know, that same natural vision that, you know, he was observed on his few kickoff returns. And, you know, it's the same thing. There's a reason that everybody's been kicking off to LaMarcus Joyner since just a couple of returns that Carlos Williams had, one in particular against Miami a couple years ago, where he showed natural vision to be able to just stick the foot in the ground and make a cut and find seams naturally without losing speed. You know, that was observed on kickoff returns, and, you know, that has continued to be evident at the running back position, maybe even more vision than what he's shown on kickoff returns. And the thing that was that's been perhaps the most encouraging about that as far as a running back is how good his hips are in terms of you know, as on a zone scheme, on an outside zone, you've got to read two guys. You've got to read that outside the play side defensive tackle, and then the other defensive tackle usually are your first and second reads, and you cut back off of whichever one of those, whatever one of those, you know, does. So if the one guy manages to stay play side, then you cut inside of him, and if the other guy continues to flow play side, then you cut back all the way across the grain. And, you know, Williams showed the natural ability to do that, and then run with power when he makes that cutback. I mean, it's just a natural ability on that zone play. And a lot of guys just don't have that. It's something you can't teach. Again, it's intuition. And he has that. And then the same thing also when, you know, you hit that and they do try to stretch the play out. He has the ability to sort of move the hips a little bit and bounce that play outside. And of course, you know, as fast as he is, you know, he's able to get to the corner a little bit better than most. So, you know, he's got the ability to do all, you know, basically the stuff that you saw from Chris Thompson last year. Very similar kind of runner as what you had with Chris Thompson, only Thompson's about 180 pounds and, you know, Williams is about 50 pounds heavier than that. So, you know, you're basically looking at a 50-pound heavier Chris Thompson in terms of the kinds of things that he can offer this offense, which is just incredible. You know, it's almost Bo Jackson style, a Bo Jackson type explosiveness and size. I mean, Jackson was an elite Olympic 100 meter type guy, so he's a little faster. And, you know, obviously, I think Bo is the best running back in history. But you're looking at that kind of combination of explosiveness and size. Maybe not to the degree of the greatest of all time, but you know, obviously. That's saying a lot, but you're looking at somebody who has that the kind of explosiveness and size that you just don't see from guys. I mean, you're looking at Adrian Peterson type explosiveness and size. You know, and to think about a current back in the NCAA who has, you know, who does this sort of thing. I mean, the only comparison that I can think of off the top of my head is you know, Williams gives Florida State what Gurley gives to Georgia. Before the season, if you'd asked me, you know, if you'd have told me that I could have any running back in the country to, you know, as a runner to, you know, put into my offense, you know, I'd have taken Gurley from Georgia because he has that kind of size, speed package, and the vision to be able to run explosively between the tackles while still giving you a good big play threat. You know, he's been by far the best running back in the country the last couple of years, as far as I'm concerned. And quite frankly, with Williams moving to running back, Florida State has a running back of that caliber on the roster all of a sudden. You know, by the end of the year, I'm not sure I'd take Gurley over Williams because Williams is faster and he's every bit as big. So you're looking at a guy who in an era where it's hard for a running back to even be a first round pick, you're looking at a guy who's quite possibly a first round pick at running back because of the unique combination of explosiveness, size, and vision that this guy has. So, I mean, in terms of the offense at this point, this offense, you know, we had gone on the record at Noel Digest. I'd gone on the record that before the year that I felt like this offense would be a top 10 offense on the year in terms of efficiency, that it would finish somewhere in the top 10, probably right around, you know, maybe even higher than the top 10, you know, up in the upper portion of the top 10. In the F-plus ratings from Football Outsiders, which I think are very good efficiency ratings in terms of measuring whether a team is successful or not. I felt like this would be a top-10 offense before the season. But with the development that you're seeing from Winston, where he's been even better than I anticipated he would be, you know, the reports out of practice were that he took too many gambles, that, you know, he was just not ready to play. Basically, the... When you're looking at the addition of what he's able to do on offense and the kind of elite anticipation that he continues to flash and the maturity that he's showing at this point, you're looking at and then you add the addition of possibly the best runner in the country at running back. This is a top five offense. I mean, this is one of the best offenses in the country by far. I mean, you're looking at the ability to do the sorts of things that Oregon and that Baylor and those teams have done. Now, obviously, Florida State doesn't run the same pace as those teams. You're not going to see necessarily the same raw numbers. But in terms of yards per play and that sort of thing and actual efficiency, you know, per drive, Florida State's going to be right up there with those teams, maybe higher than those teams by the end of the year. And, you know, you're going to continue to see great development there. I mean, that's not to say that there are no concerns. You know, the offensive line continues to need to stay somewhat healthy. There's been a few, you know, some guys that have gotten dinged up. You know, maybe the best offensive lineman on the team, actually, Trey Jackson. You know, he's been dinged up in two games now. And, you know, they need to give him enough time to make sure that he's ready to go by the time you really need him against Clemson. But this offense has those things. You know, the other concern is that, you know, Winston has flashed, at least with Bethune-Cookman, he flashed a little bit of that over-aggressiveness of getting greedy, that sort of thing, and the willingness to throw into coverage in certain spots. But you know, outside of just having too many of those plays and just a really, really bad out-of-rhythm, you know, performance as a result of, you know, Winston basically just going freshman mode, this is without a doubt one of the best, you know, three or four offenses in the country as far as I'm concerned. And then you pair that with the defense, which we'll talk about in the next podcast. This is a viable national title contender. You know, I think we're looking, you know, if we're looking at it at this point in the season, we're looking at a 1-4, maybe even better than that, chance of making the national title game with this team. Because I still am not sold on Clemson. I don't think they're as good as they were last year. I don't think their offense is nearly as good as they were last year. I think their defense is a little better than they were last year. But, you know, obviously that game's in Death Valley. But you know, I think Florida State will be favored in that game by the odds makers by the time you get there. And Florida State may well win that game by double digits. And they should be favored in that game, even though it is in Death Valley. The gulf between those two teams is only going to grow as the defense gets better. So in the next podcast, we're going to talk a little bit more about the defense. We're going to talk about what the new defense has done, what Jeremy Pruitt has done schematically so far. We're going to look at some of the concerns that we've seen so far in terms of gap control and some of the concerns that you know, maybe may come up, the things, you know, and how that'll plug into where things really matter later in the schedule. But that's for the next podcast. So for this. For this episode of the Unconquered Podcast, this is Jason Staples, and we will see you next time. I made this.